Mrs. Barnett. Mr. Nohy, good morning to you.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Your Honor, I'm Ed Nate. I represent the appellate Walter D. Barnett, counsel. The nature of this case is a quiet title action whereby the appellee plaintiff sought the quiet title pursuant to a treasurer's tax deed. My client, Walter D. Barnett, filed a counterclaim seeking the quiet title in his name. Further, we sought declaratory relief that the Nebraska Revised Statute scheme of 77-832 to 77-1835 was unconstitutional under the Nebraska and U.S. Constitution. We asserted our client's due process rights were violated. A hearing was held on January 8th concerning summary judgment motions filed by the parties. On January 15th, the Honorable Judge Martinez granted summary judgment in favor of the appellee and found my client's constitutional rights were not violated and overruled our motion for summary judgment. We then filed a timely notice of appeal. The facts of the case beyond the ones I've just described, my client was the title owner of a property at the time of the tax sale. A tax certificate to the property was sold on March 5th to Pontian Land Holdings. Pontian Land Holdings originally filed a foreclosure action in the District Court of Sarpy County.
What does the record tell us about how far that foreclosure went? For example, was your client served in the foreclosure?
Was not, Your Honor. Did not go very far. They filed it and dismissed it. They did start it and then apparently decided to go a different direction. So your point is well taken. They did not proceed with serving my client.
Okay, thank you.
Under the so when they went under the treasurer's tax deed method, they needed to serve my client by certified mail. They knew exactly where my client lived. He lived in Council Bluffs, Pottawatomie County, Iowa, the entire time. All that information is on the Sarpy County tax records.
So they sent it to the correct address, but it was returned unclaimed.
Absolutely true, Your Honor.
So what's the rationale for rewarding people who refuse to pick up their certified mail?
Reward them? I don't believe you're being rewarded, Your Honor. I do believe that in this case, the return address didn't tell us who it was from. The return address showed it was from Guardian Tax Partners, Inc. That's not Pontian. That doesn't tell my client who this is from. It doesn't tell him that,
and
oh, by the way.
What difference should that make?
Well, I don't think everybody, if you know it's coming from the people who have foreclosed on your, or gotten deed to your property, certainly it would make you more aware that you should open it and see what's going on. If it's certified mail, a lot of people don't pick up certified mail for various reasons. To me, if you're sending certified mail out and you really want to get people notice, like the due process clause said, you should put the right entity down for the return address and not come up with some other name to make it more likely he probably won't accept it. Okay?
What does the record tell us about why your client didn't accept it?
There is no record on that, Your Honor.
How many attempts were made, and how many times did your client not pick up the certified?
One attempt was made. That's it.
Were there other attempts, such as registered or expedited, which require a receipt?
No. One attempt.
What's the statute call for?
The statute calls for an attempt, and
so
then you can go to publication.
So there's one attempt,
mm-hmm.
And there's a publication.
Right.
And you said the due process rights were violated. What other actions should the appellee have taken?
Well, I think if you read the Jones case, in which it says, which is in our brief, which talks about when you're taking somebody's property, it's not enough to send certified mail, have it unclaimed, and then publish notice, which is what they did here. They possibly complied with the statute. But that's not enough. When you read the Jones case, you must make reasonable effort. That's where the due process clause comes in. Reasonable effort.
In the Jones case, the person wasn't living at the home, correct?
Correct.
Does that make a difference?
I think it's actually worse under these facts because they knew where my client was at. In Jones...
Well, they knew and they sent certified mail.
They sent certified mail, came back unclaimed with the wrong, with I don't know if they're fictitious or who these guys are, for the return address. I think the facts of Jones are actually worse, or worse in my place, because in Jones they didn't know where the guy lived. In my case, they did, and they did nothing else.
So if they had done personal service, would that have satisfied due process?
Yes, certainly would have.
Would that have satisfied the statute?
Yes.
It would have?
I believe it would have.
Does the statute call for personal service?
It does not.
Does it authorize personal service?
What's that?
Does it authorize personal service?
It does not, but I think when we look at what is required by the law, by due process, I understand what you're saying, which is just check the box and he wins. Due process requires more than that. In the Wisner case, this court talked about there's no good faith effort. You don't even have to really try to serve them. When you were talking about publication, in that case, that no good faith effort has to be made. Due process requires good faith, reasonableness, trying to serve people. You're going to take their property, you must try to serve them and give them notice.
Suppose the envelope had come from the party's lawyer and didn't say Pontian, didn't say whatever the entity was, it just said Joe Jones, attorney at law, certified mail.
No, it said Guardian Tax Partners, Inc.
This is a hypothetical.
Oh, hypothetical. Sorry, Your Honor, I didn't catch that.
Suppose it said it came from a lawyer, didn't have the name of the tax sale purchaser on it at all. Is that justification for not picking up a certified mail?
I think so, yeah. People a lot of times don't pick up certified mail. Certified mail usually isn't good stuff. And a lot of people don't pick up certified mail. They knew where my guy lived. That's one of the keys here. They knew where he lived. He lived there the entire time. Very easy to call up Sheriff Danker over in Pottawatomie County and say, go serve this guy.
When the publication occurred,
yes,
was a regular mail notice sent at that time?
No. And that's a key, too, on the publication. They published in Sarpy County. My guy never lived in Sarpy. If you're trying to really publish, to give people real notice, which
statute,
due process clause
the
requires.
The statute calls for publication in Sarpy County, does it not?
It does, and that's where we get to due process. I understand if you want to go with just check the box, like in Wisner, check the box rationale. Did they do this? Did they do that? You may have a point there. However, I do think there's a problem when they send it with the wrong return address.
Before we get to due process, I want to be sure I understand your statutory argument. In brief, it seems to me you're suggesting that the content of the notice was insufficient because it had the wrong tax sale purchaser in there. Did I read your brief correctly?
Two things. One, the return address, and two, the content. Both.
To what extent does our statute even require the name of the tax sale purchaser to be in that notice?
I believe it does require it, Your Honor. 1831 requires that at least 3 months prior to applying for a tax, treasurer's tax deed, the purchaser or assignee shall serve a notice. That's not what was done here. Your Honor, I'm on rebuttal time. I'm going to step down, if that's okay, and let him speak, and I'll be back.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Blummel, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Counsel, my name is Jeff Blummel, and I am the attorney for HBI LLC in this matter, the appellee in this matter. I kind of want to walk through some of Mr. Barnett's arguments one by one in order. His first argument is that the initial filing and subsequent dismissal of the judicial foreclosure bars a tax deed proceeding, and he relies on the case of Nunn versus Ewing, which this court took up in 2015. But that issue is not before the Supreme Court in that case. The issue before the Supreme Court in that case was under which set of statutes, the tax deed statutes or the judicial foreclosure statutes, could the owner of the property redeem? And the owner tried to redeem under the tax deed statutes, not the judicial foreclosure statutes, when there was a judicial foreclosure on file. The reason they wanted to do that was to avoid paying attorney's fees and costs. And this court decided that the only way he could redeem was through the judicial foreclosure statutes because that was what was on file. The choice of whether to proceed with a judicial or a tax or a tax deed foreclosure rests with the holder.
Are you arguing that it can never be the case that a tax sale purchaser has made an election that they can't change?
I think maybe you can get to, there's no really law to support this, but I've always kind of been of the opinion if you get to a certain point in a process, maybe a judicial foreclosure, and to your point with your questions to Mr. Nate, was summons served, was there anything happening there besides the filing? Well, nothing happened besides the filing.
Isn't summons probably the best choice, because then the true owner would have received notice, and at that point believe, reasonably, that they're in the judicial world, not in the administrative world?
Potentially. I mean, you can serve summons by certified mail as well, and if the same thing happens, he doesn't take it or he doesn't accept it, and then again, you move into publication. So I think you can end up in the same boat either way.
I think you were headed towards the next step, which was the notice. Do you think the statute requires the name of the tax sale purchaser to be in the notice?
I do not. I think the statute, which is 77-1831, I'm not going to run through the list of things it requires, but it requires in whose name the property was assessed. Well, there's a lot of things it requires, five different things it requires. The name is not one of them. That, to me, is an inadvertent mistake. It should have said Pontian, but it didn't have to say Pontian. It didn't have to say anything in there.
What does our record tell us about the relationship between HBI and Pontian?
I don't know that the record says anything, Your Honor. They're related entities, common ownership, but I'm not sure that's in the record, honestly. I don't think it matters that they had that in there. All of the information required by the statute was in there, was in the notice. And he relies on the Stewart versus Ridenour case, which is completely different. In that case, there was a requirement back then with the law in effect that you put the date the last date they could redeem the tax certificate in the notice, and they did, and they screwed that up. They missed it by a day, and I think that makes a big difference. So that's why this court said, no, you didn't do it right there. That particular requirement is no longer in the statute, or was not in the statutes in effect at the time this was going. And again, everything was in there. The Kuska versus Kubach case says strict adherence to 77-1831 is not necessary if the notice conveys the required information, which I think it did. Publication in Sarpy County, Mr. Barnett says that was insufficient. I think the recent case of Wisner versus Vandalay talks about that. That case is almost identically on point with the facts of this case. The holder sent a certified mail, return receipt requested per the statute, to the property owner at the address where the tax statement was sent. The person lived there, I believe. Certified mail was returned as unclaimed. Notice was published for three consecutive weeks.
How many attempts were made to on personal service and counsel lost?
In our case, one. And I think that is all that is required under the statute, Your Honor. They made the attempt. They had no reason to believe that that was not the right address. Now, I think had that come back as undeliverable or cannot serve at this address, which certified mail can come back that way, then I think potentially further inquiry needed to be made.
I want to be clear about this attempt to business, because years ago when I was sending certified mail, you initiated it one time, but the post office would make three attempts before they would return it unclaimed. What does the record show, if anything, about that situation?
I'm not sure, Your Honor. I could go grab my exhibit book over here and see if the envelope says anything, but you're right. Normally that happens. I'm not positive of exactly what the record shows.
It'll be in the record or not.
I think it should show. It usually does. Okay. I usually write it on the envelope, and when it comes back that way, because you're right, I see them come back that way all the time. But again, with Wisner, I mean, the facts are the same. They applied for the tax deed after the publication, and the district court found that to be sufficient notice. There was a big to-do about the meaning of the word found within 77-1834, but this court decided that the word found meant able to be served, and so this court again said that service by certified mail at the address where the property statement was mailed upon proof of compliance with 77-1832, if the owner lived at such address.
In which counties is publication required?
The publication is always required in the county where the real estate lies. And that's exactly what happened here, and Mr. Barnett argues it should have happened in Pottawatomie County, where, sure, we knew he lived and sent it there, but that's an onerous requirement. I mean, I think that's taking it too far if you ever require someone to do that. You can picture cases down the road where you have no idea where the person lives. Do you have to publish in every county in the nation? I think the way the statute is set up is you publish in that county.
Does that meet due process requirements?
I think so. I think so, Your Honor. Again, I mean, some of the cases he's relying on, I think, are distinguishable. The Jones, Lane, all the rest of the cases. I mean, due process certainly requires notice, reason to be calculated under all the circumstances. I think that language is important to apprise the party of the pendency of an action and allow them the opportunity to fight it.
How would you distinguish the Jones case?
I think the Jones case is distinguishable. Number one, the party did not, or the owner of the property hadn't lived at the house for 30 years. Here, he lived there. We knew that. Jones, they didn't, you know, once they sent their certified mail, they didn't do any further inquiry. Had they done that, maybe they could have found that he lived somewhere else. We didn't need that here. We knew where he lived. It was there. We sent it to the right place. In Jones, I would say, you know, since he didn't live there, he didn't really have a chance, presumably, to see the certified mail or to have a shot at it. Here, Mr. Barnett admitted that he never picked up any certified mail related to this property. He essentially made himself unavailable for service. Again, if it came back as undeliverable and incorrect, I think maybe we have to do more. But in this case, also, Pontine took the additional step of serving by publication, which is exactly what the statute tells them to do. That's the point here. They followed the statutory scheme exactly. No doubt about that. And I think you'd have to find that the entire statutory scheme is unconstitutional, but they followed it. They did exactly what they were supposed to do.
Can you explain who the right parties are and how Pontian got to be on deck here today?
Pontian Land Holdings purchased the original tax certificate, and they obtained the treasurer's tax deed. Subsequent to that, and prior to the filing of the lawsuit, we filed the quiet title, Pontian deeded the property to HBI LLC. And then we substituted in HBI LLC as the plaintiff in the quiet title.
In the quiet title?
Correct.
So it was initially filed under the name of Pontian?
No, because it was just the tax deed was obtained under the name of Pontian. In between the filing of the quiet title and the obtaining of the tax deed, they transferred the property to HBI LLC.
They transferred the deed?
Corporate warranty deed. Okay. To HBI.
What kind of deed?
I think it was a corporate warranty deed, and I believe it's in the record as well.
Thank you.
Again, some of the other cases that are cited in support of the due process argument, Mullane, that's a big one. All they required there was publication, and that was publication to no specific person. It was to unnamed parties, so it's just a publication out there that doesn't name Barnett or doesn't name anybody here. The statutes require that you publish in the name of the person, exactly what was done here.
With respect to the publication, I may not have the statute number right off the top of my head, but I think it's 25-520.01 requires that when there's published notice that a mailed notice be sent. Was that done?
It was not, but I don't believe that statute applies here, actually. I think
520.01
applies to...
What's your best argument that it doesn't?
Well, I think, and I don't have it with me, but I think reading it, I looked at that I think it applies to service of summons. I don't think it applies to service in a tax deed situation. I think that
doesn't it apply in cases of published notice, generally speaking?
I didn't read it that way.
Isn't that the foundation for the mailing of published notice in probate cases? Probate cases?
I don't know, Your Honor. Actually.
Thank you.
Just as a final thought here, Your Honor, I mean the text. Deed process, it's good for counties. I mean, it assures them of getting that tax revenue. You read about all the bad, the windfall supposedly for tax lien investors. Those are few and far between, and they can certainly lose. I mean, a lot of investors have lost their money. I don't think it makes sense to overturn these statutes on due process. Number one, I believe they're sufficient. Number two, given that as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. 1 minute, 31 seconds.
1 minute and 31 seconds, Mr. Nathan.
Very good, Your Honor. One thing I wanted to talk about was his argument that this is a very good way of getting taxes paid. You read the Jones case. In Arkansas, 85% of tax delinquent properties are redeemed upon notice of giving them notice of delinquency. That's actually a more efficient way of getting paid. Read the Jones case. There's studies in there. Concerning the Jones case as well, the Jones case found that publishing notice after return of unclaimed certified notice was not constitutionally adequate. That's the facts of this case. They knew where my guy lived. They made no reasonable effort. These people are in the business of trying to do as little as possible to give people notice. That's how their business model works. That's what they did here. One other thing, Your Honor, in the Wisner case, Your Honors, there was an issue of whether the tax deed purchaser was entitled to serve the owner by publication when it had been unsuccessful in serving her by certified mail despite having actual knowledge of her location. Same as here. Wisner court stated that depended upon the court's interpretation of the word found. This court interpreted the word found to mean found for legal service. In this case, my client did not live in Sarpy County. He was not amenable to service in Sarpy County. If you wanted to sue him for a car accident, you have to come to Iowa and sue him. He's not amenable for legal service. Even under the Wisner standard, service by publication was not adequate. We would ask that the court find in our favor and issue title in our favor. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. The next case of the day, then, is In Re Interest of Kaylin A.